Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Prime Social Club. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Live at Prime Social, it's Lance Zierlein and Bun B with you. The Trill.
Reflecting. OG.
Just reflective Trill. In the right here at Prime, we are going to be playing in a tournament. I don't know if Bun, have you decided if you're playing?
I don't think I'm gonna be able to. Okay. I got
Anytime we have a tournament here, you know, at noon, we got you can get a seat.
I'm gonna get a
bounty on me.
I'm gonna play. I don't know if I can do it today, but I was pretty good at Texas Hold'em.
Okay.
In my younger years.
Okay.
Took a lot of lunch money.
Hey, there's some lunch money takers here too, so you gotta watch out. Let's bring on my man Field Yates from ESPN. We're gonna talk about a few different things. Field, you play any Texas Hold'em? I know you're in the New England area, but you ever play our little poker game that we invented here?
Absolutely! What a great game! What a great tradition! I used to play in high school. I went to an all boys high school, so our social life was a little bit different than the norm, I would say. But our Thursday night tradition was a little Texas Hold'em. My parents had a felt pool table in the basement, and that basically served as our own little mini Las Vegas in our minds, at least. We had a blast, and Hold'em, one of the great games, one of the great pastimes of our country.
Yeah, it's competitive. I mean, Adrian Peterson's here right now. He's supposed to play at noon in the tournament. Rafer Alston, former Houston Rockets, here all the time. And it's a good competitive outlet. Like, I just love the competition of trying to outwill the person across from you, outthink him.
It's,
I think it's fun from the mental challenge. Let's get into the football side. Julian Edelman suspended for 4 games for PEDs. And we talked early in the show about this, Field. He's 32. He's coming back from injury. I mean, that's kind of one of those areas where you do circle that as a potential time where guys can get mixed up and caught up in it. I know he says he's had hundreds of tests and never tested positive, obviously. But from the outside looking in, the age of 32, coming back from injury, that's kind of the place where you start to potentially see these kinds of concerns creep back in.
Yeah, Lance, I don't know specifically what prompted the test, and I don't want to necessarily speculate on circumstantial stuff. All I would say is to peel back the curtain a little bit. I know you're familiar with this, but for listeners that might not be, the NFL has a banned substance list that is, I believe, thousands of substances long. Like, we're not talking about 5 or 6 things that you have to avoid at all costs. We are talking about hundreds, maybe even thousands of items or substances that you have to stay away from. And they're not things that are hard to get your hands on. We're talking about things that if you went to GNC and went and found something on one of the shelves of a particular section you visit frequently, it might include a banned substance. Now, that is not to absolve any player of taking a substance that is banned. But I think it's worth noting that guys may do, when they say, "I unknowingly took a banned substance," they're not saying that they didn't take it. It's like, "Hey, I didn't realize I was taking it. It's my fault, and I have to pay the penance here." But for Edelman, barring a winning appeal, which I would say is a classified long shot, he's going to miss the first 4 games of the season, including, of course, the first one against the Houston Texans.
Let's be real about this. This has been an unbelievable – this has been – a run that has never happened. It's unprecedented in NFL history what the New England Patriots have been able to do, their sustained success. And a lot of that has been because of TB12, Tom Brady. We saw the same thing, I think, with a parallel universe in the San Antonio Spurs. But just as the San Antonio Spurs are having issues with Kawhi Leonard and their players are getting older, we see some of the same stuff going on with the New England Patriots. And I think the Spurs – their run looks like it, to me, it feels like it's officially over. And even though they were in the Super Bowl field, there's so many things it looks like that's starting to pile up. I'm wondering if maybe we've seen the last of the great New England Patriots. I know everyone's going to just crap on that idea, but, I mean, it can happen quickly in football where teams just fall off.
Well, it certainly is sudden. I mean, I remember my first time doing a column with ESPN about 5 years ago. It was our future power rankings column. And the idea was to look ahead 3 years, maybe even 5 years, and which teams would remain at the top of the NFL over that period. And at that time, near consensus was the San Francisco 49ers. So that, to me, is the latest great example of a team that can go from good to great to, you know, basically overnight, very poor. And there are a lot of personality issues there in San Francisco. No mystery about the dissent between Trent Baalke and then head coach Jim Harbaugh and some of the other issues that permeated that organization. But for the Patriots, one thing I would say, and I think this is really where the trajectory of the franchise lies, is this. If some people want to make the Patriots' success as simple as they have Tom Brady, the greatest quarterback of all time, and they've had him at quarterback for the past 18 years. I think a more nuanced and reasonable approach is that there is, you know, an all-time great quarterback, an all-time great coach, but there's a lot of infrastructure in place. And if you believe in the infrastructure, do you believe in the ability of this scouting and coaching staff to identify the players that can secure a long-term success beyond Tom Brady, then you have to recalibrate expectations. But if you believe, and I understand that people, you know, I'm not telling people how they have to or should think, that, you know, post-Tom Brady is going to be a massive reality check for the Patriots, I get that line of thinking, too. I tend to believe that, listen, when you replace Tom Brady, you're not going to get better at quarterback, but I do believe that the Patriots have a chance to not go from Brady to crater. Like, I don't think the Patriots are going to have a Peyton Manning to that bridge year between Andrew Luck and him in Indianapolis type season. It just won't be, you know, quite as great because the standard right now is the best ever.
I'm wondering, Field, is it an issue of, you know, Brady getting older and maybe key injuries and whatnot on the team, or is it the coaching? Like, which side of it do you think is going to be the key to them kind of downshifting, because they pretty much got outcoached in the second half of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think that it's probably going to be, you know, I think right now, first of all, that I don't think that there is, I really, I know, as much as crazy as it sounds, like, I don't think Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are unable to coexist. Like, they're fine, you know, like, they've never had this relationship where they were best friends and they were out playing Texas Hold'em together during the week. But rare is the quarterback and head coach combination that's the case. I think probably, you know, if people are going to look at the issues from last year that plagued the most was, you know, the Super Bowl, there was, they had zero defensive answers whatsoever. Whether that was adjustments, whether that was a lack of personnel, whether that was,
right,
you know, some of the emotions that were driven by Malcolm Butler sitting on the sideline while the rest of the secondary was helpless there. There are a lot of factors that go into that. So, I understand why people are ready to write them off. You know, I also look at the division they're playing in, and I think to myself, like, how does Buffalo or Miami or the Jets narrow the gap before, let's say, 2019 or 2020, unless Sam Darnold and Josh Allen are really, really good players? And, you know, I personally, I know Lance is the draft guy in this conversation, if I had to hedge my bets on one over the other, it would be Sam Darnold.
Sure.
But I also know that this was a year where there were a lot of teams in the top 10 that didn't need to draft a quarterback that were saying, I'm really glad we don't have to draft a quarterback this year because I think one of these top four are going to be really good. I just don't know which one, and there's a possibility that none of them are superstar quarterbacks.
It's if you're going to have a division where – see, I don't think – to me, it's not about New England maybe falling off in their own division, although I do think, you know, that could also obviously happen quickly because teams can ascend quickly in the NFL too. But I just look at Deshaun Watson being with the Texans, and I look at what the Jacksonville Jaguars accomplished last year. I know it sounds crazy, but I do think Cleveland is going to be set for a big jump if they can get just average to above average quarterback play at some point, because they are starting to accumulate some talent. You know, for me, it's less about the teams in that division. I I think Jacksonville's the most dangerous team. If Blake Bortles plays like an average game manager, if he gets his Alex Smith on, that's a team that, to me, that can go to a Super Bowl and win a Super Bowl. But he's got to play, I think, at that level. And I don't know that people really truly recognize how dominant that defense is probably going to continue to be for years and years.
You know, what's interesting about Jacksonville is I always tell people, someone once explained this to me, a very smart football person, and I've used this line a lot recently, is offensive football is about being able to dictate. Defensive football is about being a react. The Jaguars are different. The Jaguars dictate on both sides of the ball. You know, on defense, they don't have to mix it up and throw 30 different looks at you. They can do what they do and just do it better than whatever you try to counter with on offense. And on offense for Jacksonville, like you said, Blake Bortles doesn't have to be prolific. 20 points is probably going to win them 11 games out of 16 next year if they score 20. That's just how good that defense is. Might be even more than 11 wins next year. But between the offense having an identity, and listen, it's not explosive yet, but they want to just punch you in the mouth and just do it about 1,000 times before the game is over with Leonard Fournette in the opportunistic passing game. And on defense, you know, last year they were crazy in terms of interceptions, sacks, fumbles forced, and also points scored defensively. Like, they actually contributed in the scoring realm for defense. And I think they're going to do it again this year. You're right. They're a scary, scary team. I think, you know, all things being equal, like in a coin flip game, which in the NFL, given the nature of the playoffs, being a one-game format, I almost always defer to the quarterback versus, you know, a great piece of the roster elsewhere. But Jacksonville's legit, and you give them credit because patience finally paid off. 5 straight years of picking in the top 5. I can imagine how much misery there was in North Florida having to endure bad season after bad season.
Hey, before we let you go, I already got somebody yelling at me, ask fantasy questions, because fantasy football guy has to get his – he has to eat too. But I'm a fantasy football guy and have been for years, so I don't mind talking a little fantasy with you. I'm just going to ask you about 2 wide receivers and new spots and tell me what you think they're going to do this year. Brandon Cooks with the Rams and giving a true number – well, how he fits in with Cooper Kupp and those receivers over there with the Rams. And then – I wanted your thought on Allen Robinson coming back from an ACL injury he suffered versus the Texans in Week 1 and offering a potential wide receiver one option for Mitch Trubisky.
Trubisky. I think that with as it pertains to Brandon Cooks, his season is going to be in many ways like it was last year in New England. What I mean by that is this. He's going to have probably 3 to 4 games of 125 yards or more throughout the season, and then he's going to have some games where he catches 3 passes for 33 yards, and you want to pull your hair out because you started him. His role in L.A., I think, is going to be very comparable to Sammy Watkins, right? The dynamic of being able to stretch a defense with your speed. I thought the biggest beneficiary from that trade to Los Angeles from a fantasy perspective was actually Robert Woods, because he's a wide receiver that we know just absolutely chews up yards in the intermediate passing game, which, you know, I would define as really 8 to 20 yards or 8 to 17 yards. Not a great speed guy, not slow either, but the fact that he has a Brandon Cooks to kind of create some natural gaps in the middle of the defense, I think will really help. And as it pertains to Allen Robinson, I'd say on talent alone, you can make a case for him as a top 12 wide receiver in the NFL, which it's a deep position in the league right now. I think given what I don't know about Mitch Trubisky, it's hard for me to rank him any higher than like a wide receiver 20 right now. But he is going to probably be healthy because the injury took place in Week 1 of last year. He is so good at the point of catch. Even if he's got a defender draped over him, he's long and he's got these sort of spider leg type hands where he can just go up there and pluck it. But if the quarterback play from Trubisky improves, and obviously everybody is counting on a Jared Goff-like ascension, I think Robinson is going to be a weekly fixture for you. I'm excited to see that entire offense play. I also think that Trey Burton could become an absolute monster for them. Just, you know, the kind of guy that out of nowhere, or maybe not out of nowhere, but catches around 80 passes this season.
Keep an eye on that from PPR leagues. Listen, love to do it again sometime when the season gets a little closer, Field, if you're up for it.
Absolutely, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
Fantastic. Follow him at Field Yates. young gun there in the football world. This guy got started early. It's like early 20s.
I'm going to have to reach out to him when I start picking out players for fantasy.
He is the guy, and a really great guy too, man. One of the real nice guys in this business. He's got some great things coming his way. I'll tell you who else has great things coming their way. You. If you have a home that you want to rent out, you go to Renters Warehouse, renterswarehouse.com. They charge you one fee. Here's what the fee gets you. They will market your property. They put it on the websites it needs to go to. They will, when the renters come in and the prospective renters, and they say, hey, you know, we want to rent that house, they'll do background checks on everyone to kind of vet them. Then they'll bring those names to you and the people to you, and you can decide who you want to rent to. They will then manage your property for you. They collect the rent. They will take care of anything that happens with the house. Air conditioner goes out. They're the ones. It's hassle-free for you. That's what you're paying the low monthly fee for. And then they'll warranty your renters for up to a year. Now, one of the most important things is they'll tell you how much your house will rent for. You don't know how much it will rent for. I had no idea. And I wanted to see what my house would rent for, and I followed the process at renterswarehouse.com. They got back with me. And the number was higher than I expected, and it really changed the way my wife and I thought about what we might do in the future. Well, we might not sell our home. We might instead rent our home out as well, instead, and then have someone else paying our mortgage and use the money on top of that, you know, to potentially rent a house somewhere else while we continue to add equity in our own home. And then we could come back to that home if we wanted to. That's all hypotheticals. But I'm just saying, if you've been thinking about these things, or if you have real-world decisions in front of you right now, call 713-224-RENT. That's 713-224-RENT, or go to renterswarehouse.com.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Prime Social Club. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
I mean, is it enough? We'll find out. Are we back, Del? Hey, guys. What's going on? Hey, Real. Live here from Prime Social. Bun and I are talking about the logistics of the poker scene in Houston.
Good.
And it is, people ask this, it's legal. It's a club. You pay your $15 fee. You get a card. Here's my card, Bun. I'll show you what it looks like. It's neat. It just says Prime Social. And you get your little picture on the back, and you swipe it when you come in. And that's how you do it. And
that's cool.
They don't take a rake off the top. They take a seat fee is how they do that, you know, and you play for an hour and you pay your seat fee. In tournaments, there is no seat fee. You come in here, you pay your flat fee, you pay an additional fee, and then you just keep playing. And it's a lot of fun on that one. This is going to be a rather quick segment. We went a little long with Field Yates, but I want to get back to the LeBron thing for a second. Del, let's reset this. Here was LeBron James's comments about how you beat the Warriors, because everyone's trying to figure this out anyway. Well, we'll pull it up here in a second. But you do know LeBron a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
You met him and
right before the rookie season started.
You talked to him since then, I assume.
Yeah, I talked to him pretty regularly.
Wow. What does he have any thoughts on the city of Houston? Is he a fan at all?
I can't speak to that. Oh, I've never really talked to him about. You know,
he's been here for All-Star games and stuff like that.
I mean, he's a big fan of the culture. I can tell you that.
Oh, really?
He's a big fan of the culture.
He's a fan of Chris Paul's.
He's a good friend of Chris Paul. The wives are actually really close.
That doesn't hurt.
You know, that's the biggest factor. Uh-huh. Bigger than their relationship is their wives' relationship.
Uh-huh.
Because that goes into the family, the kids, you know, that kind of a thing. And when your wife's happy, you're happy. I mm-hmm. think you understand that.
Happy wife, happy life is not it's a real thing.
And I think they're getting older now, and so I think there's certain things that Chris Paul and LeBron would like to do together, if it all makes sense. I just don't see Philadelphia, right? I don't see that as a viable option. To LeBron, I don't think the cap situation is as big a deal breaker as some people might think?
May not be. I know that Daryl has always had a plan. Every year he's got a – like, he's never going to cap himself out.
Right.
He's thinking 2 and 3 years ahead. So I've seen it laid out to where how the Rockets could go get Paul George or Chris Paul or LeBron, even with having Chris Paul – and even with having Chris Paul and even with re-upping with Clint Capella. Now Tillman's got to be ready to write some luxury tax checks because they're going over the cap. There's no way that you don't. But you do have that ability to do that.
I mean, in order to get LeBron James, I don't even think you're really taking cap into situation because whatever money you have to pay for luxury tax for a LeBron James, you get that back in your city.
I would think so, yeah.
You get that back with the – you know, I mean, my God, the 13 Rockets jersey would be probably the biggest selling jersey.
Well, Tillman's a guy also with restaurants. So all of a sudden he can – and hotel like the Post Oak right there, which is a really nice hotel.
Really nice.
He's got ways that he can – like some owners, that's what they have. Tillman's got properties where people are spending money on those as well. So you bring people in or you get people into the downtown area. He's got other ways to get money too besides just Rockets. He can benefit in other ways. Here's LeBron James talking about – how everyone's trying to figure out how to beat the Warriors.
Golden State, because of Steph's injuries early on in his career, his contract situation, and then them drafting Draymond and drafting Klay, and them being under the contracts they were in, allowed their franchise to go out to get KD. And so they win a championship, and then we play them, and we come back from 3-1, and we beat them. But that was the best regular season, probably the best team I had or have ever played against. They go 73-9, and then you add one of the best players that the NBA has ever seen. So now everyone's trying to figure that out. How do you put together a group of talent, but also a group of minds as well, to be able to compete with Golden State, to be able to compete for a championship. So that's what GMs and presidents and certain players, it's not every player. Every player does not want to, sad to say, but every player don't want to compete for a championship and be in a position where every possession is pressure.
Fans aren't going to be happy with that. It's hard to comprehend, like, wait a minute, what do you mean every player doesn't want to play for a championship or want the pressure? But LeBron's been doing it for a long time. Chris Paul's been doing it for a long time. I don't think these guys are speaking out of turn. I think they know what they're talking about when they say things like that.
And LeBron's played on several teams with several different kinds of players.
Yeah.
I take the Rockets, for example. The Rockets enjoy playing with each other, right? Like, a lot of those guys really get along very well. They enjoy playing basketball together. But I do think if you watch Rockets basketball, especially going into the playoffs, some of the guys on the team adapt better to it than others. There are certain players that we watch that we simply feel like, okay, this guy's not giving me everything. He's kind of, you know, going to sleep on a couple of possessions and whatnot. And you have that in sports. I mean, there are people who do these things for different reasons. I think, you know, Chris is the person, if you look at the Rockets, he's the guy that, I mean, if he just wanted to get a check and play basketball, he could do that anywhere. But he really wants the chip. He doesn't take any pleasure from playing seasons of basketball and not getting that championship, not getting that hardware. He wants that trophy. He wants it bad.
This is going to sting this year.
Yeah,
having to sit out with a 3-2 lead.
It's already stinging because Chris knows, especially in the second halves of these games, right? That's where ball management really comes into play.
Yep.
And that's when guys start that's where guys either kick into that extra gear or just going to neutral, you know, where they're just going through the motions.
And he did it in 4 and 5. He did exactly what you were talking about. And what he does well, you missed in 6 and 7.
Absolutely.
The mid-range jumper to break that 0-for-27 run and from 3, you didn't have that. You didn't have a guy to take over as a primary ball handler. Eric Gordon was out there busting his butt, doing everything he could, and did a pretty decent job there. But you needed what Chris Paul gave you in 4 and 5, and you didn't have for 6 and 7.
Yeah, nobody was there to give us a pace, right? Nobody was there to slow the game down, to kind of manage it, be like, okay, look, this is starting to get away from us.
Yeah.
We still got let's say, you know, if they go down 5-6 points from that 15-point lead, okay, look, we still got 10 points. Let's slow this game down because they're killing us right now on the fast breaks. Let's just slow the pace of this game down. Let me burn a little bit more clock. Let's pass this ball instead of, you know, one guy taking 30 dribbles and then trying to take a shot, which a lot of guys did. It's not just James. A lot of guys were really just burning too much energy on the court. And, you know, when Paul isn't in the game, I've noticed, and James starts to throw those threes up, everybody else kind of starts following that same lead, throwing those threes up. And then there's a little bit of indecisiveness about who's going to take the shot, like who wants to take that shot.
And that's deadly against Golden State. That's a team you cannot run into. That's when you get in real trouble, is when you fall into that trap, the indecisiveness. You better stay aggressive against them on both ends of the court, because you give them any confidence and they can avalanche you.
And what is indecisiveness? It's a lack of confidence, right? Yeah. It's a lack in your shot, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, and it gets to the point on certain occasions where certain guys don't even want to shoot, right? And that's what LeBron's talking about. Like, you got to want this.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? More than anything. I'm a musician. I see a lot of guys that once they sign their record deal, they figure they've made it. So there's no more adamancy. You know what I'm saying? They're not really thinking, well, if I don't make this hit record, things are going to fall apart. No, they sign a record deal. They're getting X amount of money from the record company. They're getting X amount of money per night for the shows. So for them, everything is on the way up. And it's like, okay, I've made it. No, once you sign a deal, that's just the beginning. And I think that's the same way in professional sports. Once you sign that, you know, good deal, big deal, and, you know, the money's coming in and your face is on these different billboards and everything, I think, you know, you start getting a little bit placated by that.
Let's break it right here, and when we come back, Gerrit Cole still getting W's, but not quite the same dominant fashion. But on the good side, the Astros hitters, there are some guys, including Jose Altuve right now, who are just doing what they do. So I want to get into some Astros here when we come back. Right now I want to tell you about Men's Tee Clinic. I need to make that trip over there. Probably be tomorrow morning. I mean, unless I get knocked out of tournament early, then I guess I'll see you guys today, Men's Tee. But I'm hoping I don't see you, because I'm hoping I go late in the tournament here at Prime Social today. But at Men's Tee Clinic, I know that I can go to that spot at 1801 Durham, right there, Durham and I-10. You get in quickly, you get out quickly. They understand your time is valuable. For some guys, you're coming in during the lunchtime, so you've got a finite amount of time. They're very sensitive to that. They're sensitive to it the first time you come in and you get tested. Yeah, you have to fill out some initial paperwork, but once you get beyond that, you get tested, and if you want to get back to work, they will call you with your results on whether or not you're low in testosterone or not, and whether or not you're a candidate for their help. If you want to wait around, they'll get you the results within minutes. And what you're going to find is if you are low in testosterone, that has an impact on your energy level, on your mental acuity. It has an impact on your overall drive. It can be your libido. It can be your at the workplace and your drive to, you know, get these projects done or move up and advance with your career. It's just an overall malaise that can set in. And that's what low testosterone does to you. It robs you of your quality of life. Make sure that you get your quality of life back to where it once was by going to menstclinic.com. Four locations, one in Pearland, you got a location in Pasadena, one in Cypress, and of course in the Heights. It's menstclinic.com.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Prime Social Club. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Live from Prime Social here at 7801 Westheimer. Lance Zierlein is in the house. Bun B is here. We're talking about the collection of minds that... That phrase, when I heard that, Bun, I immediately thought, LeBron might be talking about a team like the Rockets, because you do have PJ. I mean, you got some veterans who the Rockets issue is less about it, it's now become the conversations have now become philosophy. What is your philosophy for beating? It used to be, do we have enough talent? Then it was the Rockets were fine-tuned about, okay, we're going to have guys who switch defensively. Okay, well, you got to defensively, you got to put pressure on them on the perimeter. Like, you feel like the recipe is getting there, but then with the Rockets, once Chris Paul was out, you realized you couldn't afford to have Chris Paul. Like, there's definitely an amount of talent you have to have on the court, and not just right. you can't just match them up. You have to have certain kinds of players available to you. So if they're not, you know, you have issues. You look at the Astros. The Astros last year had a good baseball team, but then they realized, I mean, they started to falter. The hurricane hit. Jim Crane said, okay, we didn't do anything at trade deadline. We must do something for this city. Right. And Justin Verlander happened to be available. Everything happened to work out. The Astros win a World Series, mainly because the players let their nuts hang the entire postseason. Let's be real. You and I were at watch parties.
Yeah.
Well, the first watch party over with Caswell, they didn't hit. But game two, man, they were – Marwin had a huge home run in that one. You had been hitting home runs off of Clayton. You hit home runs off Clayton Kershaw, off the best closers in the game. You beat Aroldis Chapman here. Against the Yankees, you hit home run off Chris Sale in Boston, like Craig Kimbrell. You were beating the best players with your best young players. And in the offseason after World Series, instead of staying content, they went out and said, okay, let's go get Gerrit Cole. And Gerrit Cole has been killing it.
Man, he's been amazing.
Killing it. Now, in the last four or five for Gerrit Cole, and this just shows you how dominant Gerrit Cole, you know, has been. His ERA has gone up a little bit, but
it's kind of like taking a great team and making it greater. You know?
Yeah, and that's what you have to do. You can't be complacent. In his last, he only gave up one earned run yesterday. Before that, three earned runs. For the Astros, that's like, oh my gosh, three earned runs. For anybody else in the league, would take that all day long. But when you have a good team and you have a chance to win, you're doing your fans a disservice and your organization a disservice if you got a window of opportunity to win, which the Astros clearly have, if you don't do everything you can to push that window up as high as you can and make it as good a situation for as long as possible as you can. That's where our Astros are. Like, I don't want us to get spoiled. We may sit and talk about the bullpen or argue about this or that or complain about this player, but we have it good here in Houston right now.
And I think our young players are in the mindset of, you know, the better we play, you know, obviously the better we get paid, but, I mean, you know, and they enjoy playing with each other, too. That's the other thing, right?
I hope that never changes. I love watching
them. They really, really like each other as men, you know? And I think that goes a long way on a team where when talent stops, right, like maybe where you hit that wall where, you know, you're not hitting good this week or you're not fielding good, not only do your guys lift you up, you know, mentally, but they inspire you, too. Right, like you don't, you know, I feel like those guys don't want to let each other down, and collectively they don't want to let the city down. And I think that's something that doesn't necessarily work for every team in every city. Now, obviously we had, you know, Hurricane Harvey, which was something that affected everybody. It didn't matter, you know, what your pay grade was. It was detrimental. It was really, really a bad time for the city. And the Astros realized that they were in a position to not only lift the city up emotionally for a couple of games, but ride that momentum into the postseason and potentially to a championship. And I think that's something that it wasn't just the players. I think the entire infrastructure of the Astros felt that way.
Yeah.
I think everybody kind of gave themselves over to it a lot more. And I don't think, you know, our football team or our basketball team really operates that as a full roster. I think everybody on the Astros wanted to win.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. Like,
they seem to be all in together. Like,
yes.
It is – it's a rare – and by the way, that's probably the norm is what you have with with Rockets and Texans. And you just have so many different people, so many cliques. That's probably normal. What the Astros have is really special. I'm not sure you see that a lot.
No. A lot of these guys come into these situations like they have their crews, they have the people that they hang with and that they build with. And I think this team is just a little different. I'm not saying that Altuve doesn't have a best friend that doesn't play baseball or Carlos doesn't have a best friend or whatever, but they genuinely want to see the best for this team. They want to see the best for their fellow players. And that shows. I think it shows in their game. When they lose, they don't get too down. When they win, you know, obviously they celebrate, but they I don't want to say take it with a grain of salt, but they don't get the big head, right? Like,
right.
And they're still all really playing for those big paydays. You know, the younger guys are still waiting for that
check.
It
takes a while in baseball.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. They know that, you know, winning a championship brings them closer to that big payout, you know, but also brings in, you know, sponsorship money, that kind of stuff. And Houston is a city that we're not like Yankees fans or whatever. When our guys are doing bad, we don't all collectively boo people and, you know, talk crazy to them. We, you know, we try to cheer them up. Hey, man, it's just a rough, you know, you're just going through a rut right now. You know, we'll pick it back up. Don't worry. We'll come back. And it's just I think it's just a different locker room than most places. And yeah. That matters.
I got to see it a little bit in 15 at Yankee Stadium after they won that playoff series and the way that they're – and, hey, look, when you win – I mean, you find out about teams when they go through tough times, not when they win. Anybody can celebrate together when you win. It's how you handle the adversity of 160 – you know, during a 162-game schedule. And the Astros did have their adversity. And they weren't playing great baseball. They had the hurricane issue. I mean, there was a lot of adversity to get through. But I tell you who else deserves a lot of credit. The players deserve a ton of credit. But Jeff Leneau and A.J. Hinch have done an amazing job of not only Leneau, whether it was intentional or unintentional, has done a tremendous job of not just finding talent, but I think a big part of being a general manager is understanding the locker room and do you fit the right guys in there, the right ingredients that are not combustible, but instead it's an umami situation where it works together. And then you have A.J. Hinch, who has to manage egos, manage expectations, and know when to get on a guy and when to pat a guy on the butt.
Yeah, it's not just about can we go out and get this player. It's can we get this player, and will this player fit the locker room?
Like, right? Beltran was a great veteran to get last year. I don't care what he hit. They all say that.
It was a great acquisition, and I think he has that mentality that the locker room needed from a veteran aspect. It wasn't a guy that was trying to come in and go out with a bang. You know, he was very grateful, very humble in coming, recognized this may not be my biggest payday. This may, you know, I probably won't get, you know, a ton of runs or a ton of hits per se, but I'm in a position to be on a team that is very well headed for a championship. And all I got to do is kind of just find out where I fit, play my position, not rub these guys the wrong way, and offer leadership whenever necessary.
His role, he took the role willingly at the end of his career where he said, I'm going to be dad now. I got to play the dad role on this team with these young pups and teach them how to be pros. That's not easy for a lot of guys who have been stars and stars at a high level at the end of their career. I think we take it for granted. People just think it's a paycheck. But Carlos Beltran, it took an ego check to realize to stick around that long. The only way you do that is if you recognize I'm not this guy anymore, so I got to do the best I can to be this guy. And it happened to be a leadership guy.
Yeah, you
and
don't
how to be a pro guy.
You don't want to come in and start, you know, with the mentality of, all right, young guys, stand back. This is how it should be done. You know, and then you hit a 250-footer in the center field. You know what I'm saying? No, I think he realizes where he is in his game. He still had some good days left in him. But he realized that, you know what, these guys need somebody that's been in some of these places before to kind of smooth out the rough spots and just let them know, hey, you know, if you're not hitting good, it's okay. Just keep swinging. You know, that bat will come back around.
You got to break it. I'm saving some stuff for when Raheel joins us, too. Raheel, you can throw the mic on anytime you want because we're going to get to pushing. Yeah. We're going to get to if Bun's going to get his mans, Kendrick. You got to get your man's bun. Kendrick is just tripping right now. And I'm not talking about Kendrick Lamar. I'm talking about Kendrick Perkins. Perk is just trying to get in KD's head. I don't know if you've seen all that
stuff. Yeah, he's supposed to.
Perk is just rough. He's a roughneck, Perk. So I want to get to
– he's a different breed.
I want to get to Perkins. We'll get to the Pusha stuff. And we got a couple other things here that we still have to do. Hey, if you guys want to jump in and be part of the show, you can give us a shout right now. We haven't really been giving the number out. 713-780-3776.
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow, live from Prime Social Club. This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
We are back here at Prime Social, 7801 Westheimer. And you know what? Let's just do it right now, Tyler. I've got Steve here, as a matter of fact, from Prime Social. Bun is putting the headphones on. You know, Steve, I almost texted you last night because Bun has been mulling over whether or not he had time to play in the tournament. I thought we had maybe, I don't know, I know you were in Vegas. This is a Texas and Houston icon here, Mr. Bun B.
Yeah.
And so Bun almost, we almost had a new bounty for the tournament today.
First of all, there's always time for poker. So let's, let's just get that out
of the way. Yeah, Bun, that's on you, though. There is time for poker.
There's we got
actually, there's not always time if you go deep in a tournament. Because my wife was jinxing me the other day when I was at the tournament on Saturday, like, how much longer? I said, I'm at the final table. You don't say how much longer at a poker tournament. Yeah. What are you trying? I said, I don't know. Hopefully it'll be 2 or 3 hours.
Well, Lance, we always have to make decisions in life, and sometimes you choose wife, and sometimes you choose poker. So it's up to you, 100%. We are open 24 hours on the weekend, so you don't have to go home.
It's crazy. I came in here, and there's games. There's action.
There's action right now.
This morning there was action.
Have a seat, man.
I walked in here at 7 a.m., and there was action.
Yeah, there's that. You can hear the
tables this morning.
I took a commercial break. Not the last one that just passed, but the one before that. And guys were like, Bun, there's a seat open. I'm like, I'm still working over here.
No, I got a seat reserved for you right now, Bun B. Right now. Into action.
That's just, you're such a bad influence.
I've been accused of that before, but we've got a good environment here, and it's a beautiful place. And if this is your only vice, I think that you're in good shape.
So our tournament starts at 12 today. All the tournaments you have start at 12 o'clock.
With the exception of Sunday.
Sunday's at 2 o'clock because you've got to get your church in. Yeah, get your church in.
And
thank you.
You've got to get some God
in there. Thank you very much.
And then come and play some poker. Absolutely.
You can go pray for rivers and whatnot. Pray for turns. So you've got noon tournaments every day other than Sunday where it's 2 o'clock.
Correct.
You guarantee a certain amount of money no matter how many people sign up or not at
Monday through Friday is a $5,000 guarantee.
Monday through Friday.
Correct.
Saturday's usually what does tomorrow look
right
like
now,
if people
we're
can't
running
play today?
The World Series of Poker satellite right now. So for every $12,000 that's in the prize pool, we're giving away a free seat to the main event in Las Vegas and $2,000 $2,000 travel expenses. So that's for every $12,000 in the prize pool. So we changed the structure for the payout just to line up with the World Series of Poker and the main events going out in Vegas right now.
That's nice.
Yeah.
The guys I played with at the table just the other day, three of them are going to head out to the World Series and smaller
that's
events.
What you call an incentive right there.
Yeah, it's fun. We got one of our dealers out there right now at the final table in an event right now. So hopefully he's sporting his Prime Social hat and representing us pretty nicely out there right now.
I'll wear mine. Send me there. I'll wear mine.
We got your size, Bun, I promise. Got everything you need here.
So you got tournaments going on. How have you enjoyed your time in Houston? You guys opened in November.
It was January, but yeah, it's fine. It felt like
I was here at first in November.
You were in
November. Right,
we were in here setting the floors and painting and all that. But yeah, we opened in January. Man, it's just Houston is so welcoming to us. I didn't realize how much poker meant to this town and how
Texas Hold'em. I don't know if you know the name.
We're the namesakes.
Just the enthusiasts.
It's funny. There's always been a huge underground poker scene in Houston. I'm just finding out now, just from sitting at tables, how big it actually. I had no idea it was how big it actually was, and all these guys now have come from the underground scene into these legitimate houses
into
like you have and play into the light.
Absolutely.
And they're playing. Literally, sometimes they go into the day into the morning light, apparently.
I'm looking at 10 of them right now.
I know.
I was very surprised. Coming from the Vegas poker world, I was very surprised at the amount of action and play that they do here in Houston. I mean, it puts Vegas to shame. I mean, that's,
come on.
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Our games in Vegas, even at the big places, I mean, there's one exception where, you know, the people from Facebook or, you know, whatever, Bill Gates comes out there and plays. Actually, Bill Gates plays 2-4 limit. But
does he really?
Yeah, out in Vegas. But, I mean, the games are small in Vegas. It's you know, there's lots of games.
Yeah.
And there's lots of limits. But, you know, you spread the smallest limit game here, and, I mean, there's thousands on the table.
But I don't want it to intimidate people. You can sit down at a table here. Look, I'm not going to get in a game with a bunch of wolves, but you can get it at a table, and there will be some sharp guys and some not sharp guys.
Don't get me wrong. Just because there's chips on the table doesn't mean they're sharks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm watching some of this play here. And it makes me kind of want to, you know, retire and have a seat at the table. I mean, there's just some very questionable play, but it's fun. You know, it's fun, and you come and you get in, and you can make some money sometimes.
Bun, how beautiful is the place? You were here when it was a restaurant.
Yeah, I was here when it was used to be called the Fish
Knife,
and the Knife.
Fish and the Knife, yeah.
And
still a restaurant, by the way.
Yeah, and you still have food.
But it's just interesting because the bar is gone. That, to me, is the biggest thing. The bar used to sit kind of centered closer to that far wall over there.
Now they got a huge one right over there.
Relocated, not gone. It's over there now.
And then that the fish and different things used to be kind of where the cashier and all that is.
That was a fish tank?
No, they would have like some fish over there.
Oh, okay.
Like not in the fish tank, but like because they did sushi.
Like a sushi bar.
Yeah. So that was over there.
I wish we kind of still had that, honestly.
I wouldn't mind sushi.
Hey, we get it big enough here, get it popping. Let's add a sushi place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, this is just thrown in here. You don't even have to answer it. Bun was kind of asking this, and I wondered the same thing. The layout here is such that with legalized sports betting, mm-hmm. would you guys ever have an opportunity to get into that
if it ever was okayed in Texas? It's such a hot topic here, and I believe Texas will be amongst the last group that would come
That's
in.
That's what I'm thinking.
We're going to be the last for everything.
Doesn't make any sense.
I'm pushing for medical marijuana myself.
The last to make it happen.
We will absolutely be the 50th state.
I think that it's great that the federal government has taken the first steps to decriminalize it, but you're going to leave it up to each individual state, and some states are going to be hard to come across. I mean, the Louisiana and the lobbyists over there are going to fight very hard to keep it a Louisiana thing.
Vegas, too, I would think.
Yeah, well, Vegas, they've lost the battle. I mean, they were the only game in town, and now New Jersey's
They don't want Texas getting away, though.
No, but now that New Jersey's on board, and I think Delaware and West Virginia and Mississippi. It's
starting to lose that.
Yeah. We had the opportunity before Louisiana. A lot of people don't know that for gambling. They wanted to put because Louisiana started with the boats before they had the casinos. And so they wanted to put a boat in Port Arthur on this little where we have an area
That's
called
Port Arthur,
Pleasure
Texas.
Island.
Yeah.
So we have a little area called Pleasure Island that you cross the bridge and you get over there and it's kind of on the seawall and on the water.
Right.
And the business association fought against it because they felt the casinos would take their best workers, the best managers and best staff. But they used the old school argument of it's going to bring organized crime and all of that stuff into the city and all of that. So then we had to sit back and watch Lake Charles just gain millions of dollars in tax and kind of turn their little small town around.
The only crime I've seen here is some
of
these.
We're still just playing bingo.
Some of these guys pushing chips around with weak hands that end up winning on rivers. That's
that
the only crime I
illegal.
See. I'm like, that should be illegal. Yeah, hey, Steve, we got to roll, but I do want to mention Steve's here all the time, and he is a guy that I came in. I'm like, hey, Steve's here. What the hell's going on here? But we got the tournament going at noon, and if you can't make it at noon, the registration's still actually open until 2 o'clock anyway. So
come
you can come get your bounty from me, Adrian Peterson. I'm sure Rafer will be here today with the bounty on him, and one of these days we're going to put one on you too, Bun. So
I smell it coming sooner than we all think. I was very close to sitting at that noon table. I will tell you that. I was very
good.
Close.
PrimeSocialTX.com, 7801 Westheimer. We will see you this afternoon right here at Prime Social. When we come back, Raheel joins the fray, and we'll get to Kendrick Perkins, an old Port Arthur guy.
Yeah, I'll stick around.
You got to stick around because we got to find out about Kendrick.
He's technically a Beaumont guy, but his wife's from
Beaumont,
Port Arthur.
Oh, Beaumont, that's right. Yeah.
But his wife's from Port Arthur, so at this point he's from Port Arthur.
All right, break it right here. When we come back, more on the bench.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.